Hey everybody, and welcome to Treetop Talks. This is Andy Sherwood over here.
And this is Jay Halasek.
Our topic this time is going to be trees in winter, with our species highlight being the white pine, the eastern white pine, Pinus strobus.
It's going to be a very relevant section for anybody living in the north, because as you know, plants behave differently during the winter, and trees especially, they drop their leaves. They have to tolerate some pretty extreme temperatures, and it's, you know, there is a lot going on with it during winter. It doesn't just die.
Yeah, it's a pretty complex process, actually, when you start looking into it and finding out what it really takes for a tree to put up with sub-zero temperatures and for long periods of time, even.
Today's music is brought to you by Jimi Hendrix. Yeah.
Let's get that.
Let's get started.
All right.
So, there's a thing called dormancy.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that a little bit and just kind of briefly touch on what dormancy is.
Okay. Dormancy is the physiological state of the tree or any plant that allows it to endure stressful conditions, especially in this case we're talking about extreme cold, but that actually applies to other conditions too. But in this case, to go dormant for cold tolerance requires stacking up on carbohydrates, that it has energy to persist through the winter and then wake back up again in the spring as it needs to push out new growth. And it also requires a lot of different chemical changes inside the plant just to keep the cells alive at that temperature even.
And so, going into dormancy, there is actual like stages that the tree will go through before it actually becomes dormant, and it's a period where it's, you know, able to withstand all of these stresses and cold and whatnot. And that comes through, that's where acclimation comes in, I would say.
The process of acclimation is essentially the tree or plant getting ready for winter, getting ready to go dormant. So, like Jay said, there's three stages there. We can go through that.
Yeah, I'll briefly run through those for him. You have stage one acclimation, which it just signals a stopping growth. So, you know, that tree will stop putting energy into growing. And that's triggered by a shorter photo period.
It's a shorter day length.
Right. More nighttime hours. And it's this signal that gets translocated throughout the entire tree. And it tells everything in the tree, all right, stop. We're not growing anymore. Hold on.
Winter's coming.
let's take five here. And then stage two, it's not a translocatable event that happens. It's pretty easily reversible too. And that's when the first hard frost happens, so zero to -5°C.
Get that first freeze and tree goes into secondary acclimation.
Mm-hmm. And it can kind of jump in between that and stage one a little bit, but
Back and forth as the winter sets in.
Those days that are 50 degrees in December, and the tree goes back into stage one because it's thinking, okay, hold on, maybe weather's still a little favorable here. So it's kind of an in-between period between one and two. And then stage three acclimation, though, that's when you're going to have prolonged sub-freezing temperatures, so temps below 32 degrees Fahrenheit. And that's when the tree, like Andy was talking about earlier, it's dormant.
Yeah, that's full dormancy there at that point. The trees undergo a process called super cooling, so they get ultra cold when it gets ultra cold outside, and they go through all this really cool chemical process to tolerate this ultra cold temperature, and it's actually really complicated, but it's cool stuff.
Yeah, we won't get into that today, but there's a lot going on. Even when we talk about a tree being dormant, the buds of the tree, where the new growth is going to come out of next year, when the tree is dormant, there's a lot going on in terms of a cellular level inside of those buds.
Tree's sitting there building the new leaves for next year inside the buds, getting ready to grow, so that when spring comes around and it has enough cold period that it decides, okay, winter's probably about done now. Now it's probably going to be spring, then it gets warm enough, and these buds can just expand very rapidly because everything's already developed in there, mm-hmm. just can take off and grow.
It's really just about diverting energy is all that's really happening when a tree goes dormant. it's saying it's not going to put any energy into, you know, vigorously growing new growth and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to just store up energy. It's going to be really conservative with it and only use it for areas that it knows it's going to need once those conditions become favorable again to shoot up that new growth. So
yeah, just efficient allocation of resources, really.
That's really all it comes down to. So just so you know that there's a lot going on there. But
yeah.
And so let's talk about maybe what the homeowner would see when their tree is starting to acclimate and go into dormancy. One thing that's pretty common here in our area up in Minnesota and Wisconsin and all deciduous areas is the trees drop their leaves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to maybe talk a little bit about that, Mr. Sherwood?
Yeah, sure. So the leaves change color because it stops producing chlorophyll as it realizes, as the day length gets shorter at the end of summer, the tree realizes, oh, it's the end of summer, I better get ready for winter. So it stops growing and starts pulling back energy out of the leaves. That's why the leaves change to a bright color and eventually fall off, is when the tree pulls all that energy out to grow a layer of cells over the bud that eventually cuts the leaf off. And that's when the leaf kind of shoots off the branch and that's when the leaf falls. So it's really just a process of pulling that back and cutting it off and then storing that energy for later.
When you think about that process, it's happening, you know, to thousands upon millions of leaves. If you look at a heavily wooded area in Wisconsin, right when the leaves are falling, they cover the entire ground. You know, this process just happens all the time.
Yeah, simultaneously in millions of leaves, probably billions of leaves over the whole world,
and it's
really.
It's the tree just cutting off all of the nutrients and everything to that leaf, and then actually physically removing it from the tree.
Yeah.
So it can, like Andy said, grow that layer of cells for protection around the buds to withstand the winter.
Mm-hmm. Should we talk about different avoidance winter survival strategies?
Yeah, you gave one away there. So there's two main strategies for plants to get through the winter, and that's tolerance and avoidance. Trees in general are going to be tolerance because they're so tall they can't really hide from the winter, if you want to put it in terms like that, where if you're doing an avoidance strategy, you're hiding from winter, you're trying to stay in a stable area and a stable elements and not be exposed to that grueling cold temperatures and wind and everything. So
yeah, an example of that would be like a creeping juniper that would grow flat along the ground to get covered by leaves and snow in the winter, so that it can insulate itself and doesn't get exposed. It avoids the winter cold.
Right.
Whereas a tree obviously just can't do that and therefore has to tolerate it, and therefore all these crazy chemical things we've been talking about and different cool stuff that the trees do is due to that need to tolerate the cold winter.
Let's talk about a little bit too with those avoidance. You usually see that in shrubs, and that's also why, from a homeowner's standpoint, we generally advocate not pruning your shrubs right before winter, because not only is there energy in those stems that you're going to prune off of there, and that energy will be shot back down into the roots to help, you know, make new growth next spring and make it through the winter, but those stems actually are really good snow catches. And so it actually catches more snow and insulates them. So that's like kind of going back to the idea of avoidance. It's the plant trying to get as far away from the elements by, you know, surrounding itself with snow and insulating it. So
yeah,
kind of a side shoot off of that.
Yeah, well, actually, if we're going to talk about pruning for winter, another rule of thumb there would be not to prune after midsummer, because then you would get oftentimes a flush of new growth, lots of new shoots growing, going into winter that aren't going to be able to acclimate in time, therefore I'm just going to die back anyways. So it's best to do your pruning at the end of winter rather than in the middle of summer, just for that reason alone, although there's many others also. But yeah, and then should we talk about deacclimation, about how the tree decides when it's time to wake back up in the spring?
So deacclimation is, it's kind of like acclimation, but it's, you know, the process of getting out of dormancy. So acclimation, you're going into dormancy, deacclimation, you're coming out of it, obviously. So It's usually triggered by photoperiod, temperature, or some combination thereof, the two, and it's different for different plants. You'll notice oak trees specifically, they will not break bud until it's pretty warm out. They have a high, it's called the threshold temperature. And so it's the temperature at which they'll break bud at. And for oaks, it's relatively high. And they do that to avoid winter damage from, you know, times in January when it gets well above freezing. And some plants will actually hit that threshold temperature and start to break bud in January, and you'll see a lot of winter dieback. Notoriously, raspberries.
Yeah, definitely raspberries. And really the main, well, another big factor there is the chilling requirement. So every tree is going to require a certain number of cold hours before that threshold temperature is even going to be able to allow it to break bud. And that's the temperature between 45 and zero. So it needs a certain number of hours there. And like you said, raspberries that have a really low number of critical hours, I think it's like 600 to 800,
it's really low.
Super low, whereas something like an oak probably has 2,000 to 3,000, you know, critical hours at that temperature. So that's going to be a big factor of when the tree decides to wake up. Once it reaches that critical hours of cold, mm-hmm. then it can start paying attention to the threshold temperature.
And it's kind of interesting to see, too, from a standpoint of production. When you get a tree planted in your yard, you'll notice sometimes trees of the same species, one will hold their leaves a lot longer than the other, and that's because of where it's originally grown. Once a tree grows in an area and it gets that ingrained into it, so you know that the amount of chilling hours and the threshold temperature and photoperiod and everything, that doesn't change when it gets, you know, maybe shipped across the country and planted somewhere else.
Right, that's all part of the genetics of the tree. If it's from, say, a southern latitude but grown in a northern latitude, it's not necessarily going to acclimate and de-acclimate at the proper time, because it's going to be expecting a different photo period and a different set of temperatures in order to prepare itself.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's actually really important is to determine where your trees are from when you're planting.
Yeah. And then I think the only other thing with de-acclimation is just the process of pruning stuff back in the late winter,
right,
before that flush of new growth comes out. That way you have all that old stuff out of there, and your new growth can just flush right out and fill back in. And then with trees, it's the same thing. You want to get all that pruning done in the winter, and the tree is dormant when it's not going to be as big of an issue with pests and diseases and such. So
There's no pressure there to infect that wound immediately. It has time to heal up in the winter.
The tree's not actively putting energy into new growth, so it doesn't mind losing, you know, limbs and whatnot. It tolerates it a lot better. It's a lot less stressful for it. So,
yeah. So, should we talk about briefly here why it's important for people to plant woody plants, but especially trees, in their landscape in the winter, in terms of winter interest for having a nice structural garden in the winter?
Yeah, I think that's a great way to go. You have the evergreen trees and the evergreen shrubs, and they provide a real nice aesthetic appeal in the winter when all of your deciduous is going to be... Oh yeah, there's my dog coming in again. When all of your deciduous trees have dropped their leaves, and all you have is evergreens to look at, you can strategically locate those evergreens to really make a nice winter display. Other cool things we can look at is like the red twig dogwood, the cornice genus.
Yeah, absolutely. Those bright red stems, there's even cultivars that have bright yellow stems. They can add a lot of really nice color to a winter garden when otherwise you would have, you know, a bleak white landscape. So you can add a pop of color here and there to have a nice offset with that green background if you have some good evergreens, and you can have a nice color contrast there. As far as trees go that have great winter interest, crab apples are an awesome option there. A lot of cultivars have persistent fruit, so the little crab apples will stay on the tree all winter. So then you'll have these little red berries. Well, they're not actually berries, they're pomes, but you'll have these little red berries all over the tree all winter when the snow lands on them, and you have these bright red sparkles in the snow. It's really a very cool. good choice as far as winter interest goes. But also willows have bright yellow stems a lot of times, and so they'll have this really dramatic architecture with a bright yellow color, so that can have both color and a nice texture to the landscape. Although a lot of full-size willow trees can get pretty large. There's also some dwarf varieties out there, and also some shrub species of willow that also have bright yellow stems that can be a nice combination with the red twig dogwood to have some diversity in the garden, yet still have lots of nice bright color.
I'm going to go ahead and throw it out there too, just because I can. The oak tree has some great winter interest. If you're looking for a really unique branching habit, it's really unique in the way it zigzags.
Especially the bur oak.
Especially the bur oak. So if you're into that type of thing, another one you can do is the maple. If you have a well-pruned maple, it can even add a lot of aesthetic value during the winter.
That's very true, yeah.
So there's just more reasons to have good pruning practices. But I think you touched on the big one with the crab apples. Having that fruit on there is really appealing. We could also talk about blueberry juniper.
Yeah, definitely.
Evergreens that have small berries on them.
If we're going to mention that, we should also point out that those are not hardy in this area. They're from the southern U.S.
Yeah. More down towards Texas and Mexico.
So if you're down in that area,
right,
definitely a great option. Honestly, I'm not really sure what your winters are like down there. This may or may not be an issue for you. I'm guessing you don't have snow.
Yeah.
But anyways, also, though, as far as evergreens go, there's a lot of different colors and textures of evergreens. Not all evergreens are created equal as far as winter interest goes. There's some that have more of a blue foliage, blue tint to the foliage. So a Colorado blue spruce or a lot of these different junipers. There's certain cultivars that have specifically blue needles. Definitely, there's some upright junipers. I think it's called Sky High. I can't remember what species it is. But there's definitely a lot of different choices out there for blue foliage, and there's different textures too. So you can think of the sharp, pointy needles on a juniper versus the soft needles on an arborvitae or on a white pine. Yeah, absolutely.
To take a sample.
Right.
Yeah, it's the texture. I couldn't agree more there, especially with the cedars, when you get the flat, scaly like needles instead of those pointed. Typically, when you think of a needle, that's what you think of. Great way to add a little bit different texture to the landscape. And even form in general, your cedar trees can be a lot more compact. It's going to be a lot denser than your, say, a white pine or a red pine or something along those lines.
Yeah, and to get really compact with the evergreens, you could even go with a yew, which there's a shrub species of yew that has these really cool diagonal branches that shoot out at a 45 degree angle with flat, soft looking needles that just gives the tree a really cool UFO kind of shape to it, and it's really striking in the winter, especially when it's surrounded by snow. Maybe got some snow on the branches, just sits there looking like a crown, even. Right. It's just a cool plant. So,
as far as cool plants,
let's move on into the species of the episode here, though.
Anastrobus.
Eastern white pine.
So the eastern white pine is just a great tree in general. All trees are great, but we're going to tell you why this one's great. It's one of the largest conifers in the eastern and upper Midwest forests. It's got huge implications in both the timber industry as well as both the forest industry. And even for homeowners, if you have enough space for it, the white pine is just a great option for a tree.
Yeah, it's also very important in the ecological sense of the forest. It supports a lot of wildlife. Deer browse on the new growth, and squirrels love the seeds. They'll eat right out of the pine cones.
So maybe we should start with IDing the white pine a little bit here. It's got fascicles of 3 to 5 inch long, like blue, green needles, so that's pretty identifying. And then their cones are a little bit big for a pine. They're 3 to 6 inches. You can find terminal buds are a little bit, they're about 3/8 of an inch long, so they're bigger. They're not huge, but
they're kind of orangish too in color.
Yeah, Yeah. I think one of the orange color definitely gives it away.
Mm-hmm.
One of the more distinguishing features is probably its bark.
Yeah.
It's got really...
On an older tree, the bark is very distinctive.
Right.
These kind of dark brown, platey, with against like a grayish bark background.
It's a really deep furrow.
Yeah,
for a
it
pine
is.
Tree to have.
Yeah.
And when they're younger, it's a smooth gray that's also fairly unique to the white pine.
Mm-hmm.
There are a few other evergreens that kind of look like that, but it's pretty easy to pick out of a landscape.
Yeah, to me, they're easiest to identify on a mature tree because the overall architecture and branching of the tree is really distinctive.
Mm-hmm.
It's got these long horizontal branches that kind of shoot out to either side going up the tree. They've got kind of weak wood, so sometimes there'll be a broken branch with a stub there, and they've always just got this really kind of cool, iconic look to them. Once you recognize it, they're very easy to pick out, and you'll see them everywhere.
Those branches that are, you know, they grow around the tree almost in a perfect circle. It's called world branching, so you'll have five branches, you know, coming out all in a circle, and there will be big gaps in between the branches, too. So that'll be really easy to help identifying.
Yeah, right. This tree's going to be found throughout most of the northeastern U.S. and into Canada, too, definitely on the eastern side a little ways. And then it looks like it extends down, as I look here on the map, to northern Georgia, even, just a little bit. But then it extends up west into about halfway through Minnesota. And it has quite the range as far as that whole kind of region of northeastern North America.
It's pretty much all over, and
yeah.
We're gonna kind of get into now its importance in the landscape a little bit. The white pine is probably most famous for its role in the timber industry, I would say.
At least in Wisconsin,
it was a huge industry.
Area,
I should clarify a little bit. The white pine was a really big reason why the timber industry took off as much as it did, because you had really the large old growth white pines that were sometimes 150 feet tall and 40 inches in diameter.
These trees were several hundred years old, probably 300 to 500 years old for the oldest ones, and a whole forest of trees that old that hadn't been changed in half a millennia.
And so if you look at that from a timber aspect, you could get 10, 15 foot logs off of one tree. And, you know, however, when you mill it down, the 40 inch diameter log, just some incredible wood you can get out of that, as well as the fact it's a fast growing tree, so it's a softer wood. It's not going to be like oak where it's pretty hard to work with. That white pine is just so soft, it's easy to work with, and it doesn't shrink or swell very much, so for building purposes, it was huge.
Yeah, it was a great wood that was really being used a lot. Still is, actually. They've kind of switched over to other pine species for a pathogenic reason that we'll talk a little bit about more later. But really, so the logging thing was huge because they ended up logging up almost all of the old growth forest. There's almost none left. And so
very rare to find a pine that's older than 200 years.
Right.
Nowadays,
exactly.
In 2017.
Right. So there's lots of young white pines still, but there's not really any huge old white pines.
You saw the giants fall, and they didn't realize at the time likely the impacts that they were going to have when they did that. But
yeah. So, well, yeah, let's get into that pathogen I alluded to there.
With every great species, there is a great pathogen, of course. And this one is not exempt from that. White pine blister rust, probably the main reason white pine is not so much planted for wood anymore. It's a disease that really is, it's just nasty.
It's really wiped out a lot of
the
white pine in the area.
If you get an infestation of white pine blister rust in a dense stand of white pines, it's a fungus that thrives in humid areas. So you have all these white pine plantings that are really close together because you want those upright, tall trees, and it just made it a really nice area for this disease to thrive in. Maybe let's go into some of the symptoms that they can expect if they see white pine blister rust in their area.
Yeah, the most obvious thing that you'll be able to see is if a branch turns brown with all the needles on it still, and it just completely dies, that is very characteristic of white pine blister rust. So if you go up to that branch, you'll see a canker at the base of the branch where the brown has moved down the branch and is going through the stem to try and infect the rest of the tree. So a lot of times you'll even see the fungal fruiting structures coming out of this canker or out of the needles, and this will be very characteristic. I mean, if at this point, if you have dead branches on a white pine like that, it's almost definitely white right. pine blister rust. There's nothing else that has
the tree, that the similar tree does symptom not around deal here. With it very well.
No, not at
because
all.
Because white pine is so fast growing, it makes it very susceptible to diseases like this because it does not allow a lot of energy to fight off pathogens and diseases.
Yeah, and the wood is so soft, so it can move so quickly through mm-hmm. the wood.
It's really just not prepared for this at all.
Yeah.
This disease has ravaged parts of Wisconsin and the upper Midwest, and lots of the southern areas also where it can thrive on a more year-round basis. So.
Yeah.
Which is also why you should do your pruning in the winter.
Yeah, so, well, let's talk about that a little bit. If you have a white pine and you notice that it suddenly gets white pine blister rust, what can you do about that? The best thing, I suppose, would be to prune out the branches if it's not spread too far.
If it's a mild infection.
Right. If it's confined to one or a few branches, you can just cut them out, and hopefully it won't have spread too bad.
And even there, it is pushing it a little bit. But if you start seeing several branches that are obviously infected by white pine blister rust, you're better off to just take the tree out at that point. Because it's likely infected the entire tree and been translocated.
And at that point, it's best not to infect any other white pine you might have
in the
area. You want
to remove the disease specimen.
Right. So not only cut it down, but get all of the brush and wood out of the property or burn it or something, whatever
get
you can do.
Get it out of the area.
Yeah.
Because it is a disease and it will live for a while on the tree if you just cut it down and leave it there.
Right. Yeah, those spores can reinfect other trees right. still.
You want to get that out of there. But
right.
Aesthetically, if you want to plant this tree, it really fills in nicely if you plant it by itself, but it also does do well in a stand with lots of other white pines if you're willing to prune it. Limbing it up and keeping the bottom 8 to 10 feet of maybe a 20-year-old white pine clear of limbs really lowers the chance that you're going to get white pine blister rust because you'll just increase air movement through that area. And it's a fungus that, like I said, it thrives in humidity, so you want lots of airflow.
Right.
So limbing those up is really good. And it does have a nice form. It gets really tall. But you definitely are going to want some space between this tree and your house because it is a soft wood.
That's the thing is that white pine is a huge tree. If you want one, that's great, but you need a lot of space for it. It can't be close to a building. It can't be close to a power line. It can be close to other trees. It does tolerate that pretty well. But it just can't be close to anything that you don't want it to fall on or drop branches on or anything like that because they do have a tendency to do that.
It is truly a giant once it gets established in an area, so you just want to prepare for that because you'll have limbs coming off of that tree almost guaranteed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like I mentioned earlier, that's part of the unique thing about that tree is it has weak wood and drops its branches, and that's just what it does. It's kind of unavoidable unless you do a lot of preemptive pruning,
sure.
which it's possible you could keep up with it, but it's not really practical.
Not many instances do I recommend people plan on being able to keep up with pruning a white
pine. No, especially considering how long it can live. It'll outlive you if it's cared for that well, so the next owner is not going to take care of it that well. Just don't plant it that close to a building, really, or a power line. But anyways, if you have the space, absolutely recommend it. It's a wonderful tree.
It grows on well-drained soils. It doesn't like any clay soil. It doesn't like wet feed. It usually kind of hangs around bluffs and ridges in its natural habitat.
Doesn't mind that sandy soil
right.
if it has enough moisture.
It's it really doesn't need a whole lot of water. It's relatively drought tolerant, not extremely, but it can tolerate being dry for a good portion of the year.
Once it's established.
Right. Yeah. It's the establishing that really takes the time out of it. So.
Yeah. And if you want to plant a white pine, if you have seedlings, they are going to need shade in their first 5 to 10 years. Otherwise, their young growth will suffer from kind of sunburn almost. Mm-hmm. They'll get kind of scorched. They're adapted to being underneath other big white pines. So they're expecting this deep shade. And if you take them out and put them in full sun, they will fry. But once they grow up, then they're expecting to be in full sun. So if you're planting a medium to large size tree, then it's fine to plant straight in full sun. It's no big deal. But if you want to grow a tree from a seed, or if you have a seedling, or even just any young tree that's a white pine, it's best not to plant it in full sun right away. If you can give it some shade until it gets to size, that'd be great. Eventually it'll outgrow whatever you give it to shade anyway. So yeah, it's just kind of a fun way to grow trees when they're young. I like that.
And it just goes back to how it grows. It's meant to be amongst all the white pines that are around it and giving it shade. So
right. It's expecting that, and that's what it's going to put that's it's its growth to do. Yeah. So I think that's all we got for you guys.
Yeah. With that, I want to thank you for tuning in to another episode of Tree Top Talks. And we'll see you next time.